Legacy Blog. I've been writing that for about 3 years now. Before we begin, we wanted to, if anyone wants to move up, just for a sense of, you know, greater community, we would appreciate it, because you guys are all over the place, so. And also, I'd like to invite my fellow panelists to go ahead and introduce themselves first, and we get the elevator pitch, their websites are.
This is such good luck.
My name is Paul Harrell, and my blog is selfreliantfilm.com, and it deals with small crew, very, very low budget filmmaking, both films that are being made today, like a lot of films are actually here at the festival this year, and then also films from the past that I covered, where whether it's John Joseph, John Cassavetes, or Italian Neorealist stuff.
My name is Lance Weiler, and the blog that I have is called workbookproject.com, and it's a filmmaking resource that is meant to bridge the gap between technology and filmmaking. So it shares a lot of information in terms of everything from harnessing tools to be able to figure out how to better promote your films to things around deals and business, and it has a weekly podcast that we do where we talk to various individuals from the industry and different industries, also gaming and software and all kinds of things like that.
My name is Mark Rabinowitz, and my blog is The Rabbi Report, and no, it's not a religious blog. I write mostly about film, but pretty much about anything that strikes my fancy. I'm incredibly lazy and would appreciate anybody giving me a goose to post more often. I'm hoping to launch some podcasts this week, but I haven't quite figured out how to do that yet. And I guess that's, I'm a co-founder of IndieWire. Not there anymore. I like to think of it as a baby I no longer, of which I no longer have custody, but.
My name is Agnes Barnum, and my blog is agnesbarnum.com. I mainly post about documentary film and film reviews, what I see, where I go in terms of industry events. But I also talk a lot, I experiment a lot with technology and building community online. So when I try out new tools, I tend to write about them and let people know how they can use it, point people to articles that I think will be helpful for filmmakers to use technology. And I also author or publish a blog at Renew Media, which is a nonprofit organization for filmmakers. They give grants and that kind of thing. That's more towards policy and technology. It's called Resources.
I'm Joel Heller. I have a blog and podcast called Docs That Inspire. It started about 3 months ago. And I was feeling very isolated working as a filmmaker, a film editor, and I wanted to connect with the larger community and find collaborators who were interested in social issue documentaries and help evangelize and advocate for more of the kinds of documentaries that I wanted to see.
All right, I'm gonna eventually open up to a Q&A, but before we started, we wanted to throw the floor open to you and ask, I'm sure many of you are also bloggers, but what would you, is there anything you'd like to hear in particular? Like, why are you here, sir?
I'm starting up a film blog, which is kind of like the new grade system. The question is, one of the biggest obstacles being stars, how do you get into screenings or at least trying to get a review ready before the movie actually comes out and people have already read all the reviews?
Okay, so access, right. How do you get advanced access? Okay, and that actually ties into something we're hoping to talk about. So, anyone else?
How many of you actually have a blog out there?
Fabulous.
Wow. So you don't need us to tell you how to do it. Okay.
I was thinking more just like what grassroots marketing, getting your name out there and you know, getting exposure to your
website. All right, so. How do you get noticed?
Generating income.
Okay, yeah.
Issues of fair use, like what's going on with press, health, and sports, what you can take from another source versus and post versus what you know, right state.
Okay, that's interesting. What was it? You wanted to know about issues of fair use. you know, how much of someone else's material you can use and how much you're safe using.
From Netflix, I'm trying to figure out how that helps bloggers and people write about film to foster that.
You within the Netflix community? Is that?
In the whole film community.
Okay.
Within Netflix and outside Netflix.
Okay.
I've been doing this roughly about 3 years, and it's mostly just personal stuff. I don't have a readership much to speak of outside of people I know, but my biggest problem is resources, because I don't know HTML, I don't know any of the programming languages, and I'm wondering what resources y'all can recommend as far as trying to improve my experience and information so that I can improve the site.
Okay. All right. Maybe we should start with your question, since I think it's a pretty, we can all give a pretty succinct answer as to what we use. I know I personally, my blog is on Typepad, hosted by them. We just pay, I think, $15 a month, and it's very functional. I've had no problems. But you?
I use WordPress.
That's what I'm using.
And that meets my needs. My site is very text heavy. It's basically my postings. There's not a lot of stuff except for occasionally that isn't text, except for the occasional image or very short image or short like QuickTime movie or something that I'm usually linking to, which I've put on the site. But if you're using WordPress, I would say that's for me. I think that's what a lot of us are using. What's your?
I use WordPress as well, but. I do a lot of plugins and stuff with it and templates, so but I love that platform.
And Lance has a really unique site.
Thanks.
I use MovableType. I have a service provider that I use called Living Dot, and part of the MovableType sort of, what is it, six, group of six, or whatever it's called. I think it's $17 a month, and they have great customer service. And I guess MovableType is a little bit more complicated, but they're all pretty. It's sort of like, if you know what this picture means, you click on it and that's what it does, like puts up a link, that kind of stuff. You don't really need to know, I mean, it helps to know basic HTML, but it's not, you don't really need it for most of these things.
I use WordPress also, and I'm like Lance, I do a lot of modification on it. I think one thing that's important is to try new things. You know, there's tons of plugins out there. People are always developing new little tips and tricks that you can just use. They're easy to install. There's a whole plugins area. It's dropping a folder, and they'll give you instructions on how to do it. And some of them don't work. They wind up being kind of buggy, but you can go on to the next one if it's not working. So, but I don't know PHP. I do know HTML, so I can kind of make things bold when I want them to be or whatever. But yeah, I don't have a degree in programming or anything.
I use WordPress, and I prepare my posts using Ecto on the Mac and kind of mock it up in there and cut and paste it into WordPress. And I'd encourage you to find a mentor, because there's so many little niggling details that break. And the plugins, when you upgrade WordPress, some don't work. And right now I'm having a problem with the compatibility between FeedBurner and the RSS feed. And it becomes pretty important just to have someone you can call who's been through it or knows where to point you. Because you don't want to, if you're a filmmaker, you don't want to become completely consumed just by becoming a technical expert. But there are people who've been down that road you can turn to.
And there are actually a bunch of, for each of these platforms, there are websites that are helpful. There's one that I use called Learning Movable Type. This woman has created this giant website with a searchable, and you can find out how to do really anything you want on it. I'm sure they're the same things for all the other platforms.
I go to bloggingpro.com and johntp.com a lot for WordPress help. They know a lot of plugins and always recommend new things. So if I want to know how to do something, I go. Blogs that are about blogging are huge. There's a lot of them. They get a lot of traffic. Okay. So I wanted to start us off with a topic I think will often be near and dear to any blogger's heart, blogging and journalism and where they overlap.
whether are bloggers journalists, and do bloggers want to be journalists versus, you know, with regards to journalistic move or ethics and versus access. So I mean, I have, well, Mark, why don't we start with you, since I think you, given your background in journalism, you are a journalist.
I mean, it really does depend on content. I mean, there are people out there blogging about their cats. They're not really, they're just writing about their cats and what their cats do and showing pictures of their cats. If they want to consider themselves a journalist, that's fine, but there's really no ethical, they're not going to run into, I mean, you know, depending on what they do with their cats, of course, but they're not going to run into any serious problems. But if you're a film journalist and you're going to screenings and you're doing interviews, then yeah, you're a journalist. Just because you're self-published doesn't mean that you're not, you know, bound by laws that other journalists are, or ethical guidelines, or, I mean, you can still be sued for libel, and I mean, there's plenty I think there's no question that those of us that are blogging about film and writing about news stories and interviewing people are journalists, and it's, you know, it's just a different platform.
I mean, what do you see of, I think there's been a slight backlash from print journalism as to where bloggers stand.
Yeah, sure, because I think there are some bloggers that don't believe that they're journalists and feel like just because they're sort of at the vanguard of technology or it's a new form that they can play fast and loose with things, and I think that's irresponsible, and it does a disservice to the rest of the community, and I can see it. But I think there are also some print journalists that are just fuddy-duddies, basically.
And I think there's a silver lining to the amount of sloppy journalism that's online, and I think it's going to teach people to question everything, including traditional media. And I'd like to see media literacy be mandatory in schools, and I think this is going to force the issue as people really start to question the intention and the source and the integrity and the facts, and I think that's the silver lining of it.
I agree, even the, you know, papers of record, the amount of buried leads and shoddy reporting in traditional print media and television is abysmal.
But I don't know, I mean, A.J. Schnapp, who happens to be here, you know, made a great post about when the carpetbagger, the New York Times blogger for the festival season, mistakenly announced the wrong Sundance winner ahead of time, and then just deleted the post, right, and Hollywood Reporter was it that had linked to him, they went and just deleted it, and then nobody cared, like you pointed it out, and there was no discussion on the blogosphere. People, you know, you talk about Anna Nicole and it's everywhere, right? Everybody's posting about it, but here this like major news source that everybody goes to deletes something that they posted, mm-hmm. and there's no backlash.
Well, what you're supposed to do, according to the blogacat, I don't know, is do a strike through and then correct it so that everybody can see that you made the error and then that you corrected it. By just pulling down the post, you're like, huh, didn't you imagine it, wasn't there.
Well, there seems to be a bit of like, with traditional print outlets that have a blog, that the blog is kind of the place where you don't have to fact check, or you don't have to follow, like if someone says, please don't post a review until the week of release, which will often be the case, that people will be like, it's okay if it's on the blog, I can say actually whatever I like, I don't need to follow that, it's not official. I mean, do you find that's the case with, and what does that do, what does that mean for bloggers who are just bloggers? Anyone? No.
Well, on the point of the Hollywood Reporter and all that stuff, I think that what should have happened is, whether it's a strike through, if that had been the paper, they would have printed a retraction. Mm-hmm. And what was really missing there was that it wasn't just that it was taken down, it was that it was taken down and it was as if it had never existed. It wasn't as if they took it down and then said, we mistakenly reported this. This is the truth, or this is what happened. There's something almost Orwellian about the zero, the missing post right there.
It was in the
ultimately, the fact that it's about what won at some festival is not very terribly interesting to me. What is interesting is that practice carried through to other kinds of areas is very important. And so that gray area where journalists are still sort of learning the rules, or taking advantage of the fact that other people are, their readers are learning the rules, is of concern to me. And it's not, and for the record, I'm not a journalist. I consider myself a blogger, and it's very, and I think of myself as not obeying those sorts of rules at all. I think of myself as an advocate, not as a journalist at all. And I've taken things down, but I think that whenever, you know, I edit posts online, that I'm, after I read them, I realize, oh, I could have said that better. I changed the wording. And I don't do a strike through.
Oh, no, I don't.
Because I feel like, who cares?
Well, also, it wasn't a factual error.
They're not factual errors. They're errors. They're issues
grammar,
of expression.
You
know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like Dewey beats Truman all over again. Yeah.
Right.
Well, I mean, what kind of access have you guys had? Like, do you ever have trouble getting this access? We discussed this a bit. I mean, how willing are places to let you see an advanced screening or get press accreditation for a festival?
I found there's a real split between publicists who appreciate bloggers and aggressively pursue us, and those who just can't be bothered and see us as hobbyists and don't return emails, don't send screeners. So there's still an evolving understanding about how blogs are important. And I think the publicists who get blogs realize that we're covering things that fall through the cracks. And especially in the documentary world, there's almost no devoted documentary press. So it was shocking before Sundance to contact publicists and find publicists who were absolutely not interested in any coverage from a blogger. And then there were those that overnighted a screener to me and set up interviews within 4 hours of getting an email. So there still seems to be, not everyone knows what to do with bloggers, and festivals as well. Some will credential you in a heartbeat, and some send you a form letter and don't return phone calls.
Well, it also depends on if you have a track record with certain festivals or certain publicists, and whether you're going the indie route or the studio route. But even in studios, there are some publicists that are, you know, yeah, sure, come to the screening. And then some that won't. I mean, I used to do a lot of home video reviews on my blog, and there was one publicity firm, big publicity firm, that was great. They would send me anything I wanted. I was like a pig, you know, I was just like, and I would write about it, and that was great, and they were happy with that. But then there were other I'm sorry, and they would, you know, turn up their nose and say, no, we require, you know, 100,000 page views a day. I'm like, oh, so basically CNN is getting your stuff. I mean, it really is. You don't know until you ask, really. But I would definitely suggest that you have stuff up. I mean, don't even try to get access before you have some stuff up and people can read your work and see that what you're going to do with it. Because if you just say, I'm going to start a blog, or it launches next week, and they don't know you, you're not really going to get anywhere.
I've found that, I'd be interested to hear what you have to say about this too, but I've found that people are a lot more receptive to sending me screener copies or whatever. One thing I should say is I live in Roanoke, Virginia, so it's not really the hotbed of cinema that, say, New York or Los Angeles is, or even Chicago or Boston, in terms of going into press screens. I'm getting everything through press screeners. And when people send me things, it's because they... usually because I've made some sort of point about why it's in their interests for them to send me the work. I make a case about how many people see my site, what the niche audience is that reads my site, why these are the people that are actually going to go see their movie. And then I link to some posts that would be illustrative of the kinds of writing that I do, so they understand, oh, this isn't a guy who's writing about his cats. So I think that is a strategy for those of you that are doing this sort of thing, is that when you're contacting, because blogging, we are dealing with the people that are writing about their cats. That word is used for everyone, and you have to show in some ways that you have to legitimize yourself in their eyes, and I'm fine with that. You know. So, but Lance has done a lot of interviews and with some really big name people, and I'm interested if that's the same sort of route you've taken, or how's that work?
Basically, what I'll do is I'll just call them on the phone, or if I can't get through, I'll fake extension numbers until I can, and then talk to them. But a lot of it comes from them seeing what's up there, and we the podcast that I do, I use this thing now, and I'm not plugging it because I have any affiliation with them. I'm plugging it because it's excellent. It's free. It's called freeconferencecall.com. And the one thing, if you want to do any podcast stuff, you can be on the phone for like 6 hours, record, they'll kick out a WAV file for you. You can even pull an RSS feed from it. And so I think sometimes what happens for me is, because it's not in sound bites or it's not short or it's, you know, we just kind of had an organic discussion, I find that people really respond to that. So they'll listen to some of the other things and then they'll come back and they'll say, okay, yeah, we can talk about it. And then the audience that I'm going for is really kind of, you know, there's a gap between that information. So, for instance, last week I did an interview with the director of Monster. And we talk all about how she went from speed dating at a festival to, like, going to the red carpet. But then we talk really about, you know, how it was packaged, what was that like, was there any times where they were trying to force her off the film? And we get into the elements of the emotionally charged stuff and talking about things that by the time we're done, you know, she's like, that was really great. I when I talked all about it, you know, first I'm talking to her way after the fact, so there's all this information that's happened since it was a news story, and that's worked out really well.
I'd add to that one of the things I was doing was getting writing assignments from some more established outlets. I wrote a few articles for Documentary Magazine. I just had something on IndieWire, which, you know, so you do that, and that's kind of like added to your list. And, you know, also the people that you know quoting your blog and linking to you, you know, it increases traffic and visibility for the stuff that you're writing. So, you know, for people who don't make an effort and like go out into the blog community and try to make friends, you're remaining isolated, and you will remain isolated. You have to go to and read other people's stuff and make comments on their blog, let them know what you're writing about, and especially like what Paul's saying, if it's of a particular interest, you know, they're going to want to. I mean, we're all probably avid readers, and we're out there looking at what everybody else is writing and talking about and trying to, you know, maybe we're trying to fill a niche that maybe isn't being covered, but we also want to point to each other. So being part of the community is important.
So I wanted to ask, you describe yourself as an advocate versus, say, a critic. At a festival like this, where there are a lot of films that won't or that don't have theatrical distribution, that and it's a very small and very friendly community where chances are you will get to know a filmmaker or people you know people who have worked on a film. How do you approach covering a film?
Well, that's obviously a really good question. One thing is, I'm also a filmmaker, and so I feel like I'm dealing. When I meet people at a festival, I'm dealing with them on at least two levels. One is as a filmmaker to filmmaker, which is a professional and friendly relationship. And then there's also and the blogging is really subsidiary for me to those two things, because I got into blogging because I'm a filmmaker. I didn't get into filmmaking because I'm a blogger. I try to be fair in what I write about. If there's a film that I try to be fair about what I write about, but I really only devote, and Joel said this as well in the sort of pre-conversation we had before we came in here, I only write about things I like. Blogging is one of many things I do, and filmmaking takes a lot of time, a lot of my time. So I don't want to spend a lot of time writing about things I don't like. Now, occasionally as an advocate, that means defining yourself or championing something against something else. And in those cases, I'll write about something negative, whether it's, you know, whatever, some crappy, you know, Hollywood sequel or something. But I'm not going to write a full-on review just of that movie. It's not worth my time. As far as what are the ethics of, oh, am I going to review Hannah Takes the Stairs because I'm friends with Joe Swanberg? If I like it, I am. And if I have negative things to say about it, then I'll say those things. Because I feel like if I can say it to that person's face, and I can say it on the blog. I happen to like the movie a lot, so it wasn't really an issue. And I think that's also one of the things, is that I typically am friends with people whose films I like already. Now, they may make work that may be flawed or whatever, and I'm comfortable pointing those things out. But that's, you know, that's where it is for me.
It's kind of different in my perspective, because I actually, what I do is different than, well, maybe Agnes and I and Joel share a similar thing, but, you know, mine is not really about, it's trying to inform people. You know, I'm trying to help spark something. I'm trying to move things towards an open market and filmmaking. So it's a little bit different in terms of, you know, because I'm a filmmaker by choice. You know, that's my trade. I make films. But I saw this, you know, I was constantly asked by people, you know, how do you do this? Or because I self-distribute my work. So for me, it was like I'm hoping that I'm going to help turn them on to something that they didn't know. So it's a little bit different in terms of what I'm doing. The audience is anybody who might like, you know, films, but I don't necessarily go in to review films. I'm looking at them for different reasons. You know, I'm looking at it from either a technical perspective or how they're getting them out there in terms of building their audiences, how they're, in some cases, you know, finding revenue, or in some cases how they don't even care about the revenue and they care about the work. So it's a little bit different in terms of the way that I approach it.
I've always had a policy that if it's some small indie film, and you know, it's somebody's first film, or even if it's their fourth film, if it's lousy, I agree. I don't feel the need I don't want to take the time, and B, I don't feel the need to bash it, because you know, somebody put a lot of work into it. Unless you know there's some particular political or social reason that it offends me, and then I'll tear it a new one, which I've been known to do on occasion. Although I really don't think Andy Garcia has read my review of Lost City, I had a lot of fun trashing it.
You might have wept a lone tear.
Yeah, one can only hope. I do feel the need to occasionally write a negative review of a, you know, big studio film or of an indie if there's something really, really wrong with it. But otherwise, I don't. I agree. There's no. It's not my job. I'm not. I've decided I'm not a critic that just goes and reviews films, and I'm not getting paid to do that. So why bother?
And I think like Lance, all of us to some degree. But I first and foremost think of myself as a dinner party host for a community of interest. I'm interested in creating community, connecting filmmakers with the audiences of interest that are interested in the social issues they're writing about. And I think when the title of the panel is, you know, what are the benefits? I think probably the number one benefit of blogging for me has been this deep sense of community that happened from within 24 hours of my first blog post, when Agnes discovered my blog, already had linked to it. And when we talked a week later, she was so welcoming and supportive. So I think right now we're in this period where we're early adopters still to some degree. And if you reach out to other bloggers, there's a really deep sense of community and warmth and helping each other. And I think that's been the biggest gift of blogging.
I wanted to ask those of you who been working on the filmmaker side as well. There seems to be this, the internet might be the new film school in a way. Now that resources are available where you can go ahead and try and shoot your film yourself. You don't need $1 million to shoot your first film. I wanted to ask about, you know, what's your approach towards providing information, towards sharing technique, towards sharing resources?
I was originally gonna the workbook project kind of came out. I went to this thing in Montreal that was a digital summit. It was called DigiMart. It was about digital distribution. It brought people from all different parts of the world, and we each kind of talked and met each other, and it was really great. And I had been thinking about writing a book about some of the knowledge that I had. And when I went up there, I met some people that were in the open source movement, and I got really kind of inspired by the idea of Creative Commons and sharing information. And I actually came back and just decided to start the workbook project and share what I knew. And it was interesting because what it did was it sparked a real community, and there was a demand for it. You know, people really started to respond to it. But what was probably also interesting was it actually started to create all these additional revenue streams for me. All of a sudden, I was making more than I would have off of the advance of the book and stuff. So that was actually kind of interesting. By giving away what I thought I was going to hold and sell, I actually found a lot more opportunities. So it was kind of counterintuitive to what I was used to. But I think in terms of creating that, you know, that sense of community, and then, you know, explaining certain elements like we do within the workbook project. Because I should stress too that the workbook project isn't meant just to be me. It's actually a social open source experiment, which means that I'm hoping to create a repository of information for filmmakers. So eventually what it will live as is people will be able to download it, edit it, and then revise it. And there'll obviously be some type of editorial eye towards that. But so it'll become a resource that people can use. So in a sense, becoming that kind of thing that helps them in terms of their deals. So instead of distributors having deals, you know, filmmakers will have their own deal points, and they'll know how to better monetize their work if they choose to do that, or get their work out to a market. So, you know, for me, it's been really great that way, because I'm getting stuff from submissions and things from people all over the world. So it's kind of like, collectively, it's changing the model of what typically film school was. I mean, because I guess when you go to film school, you hope to have a community around what you do. And there are a lot of people who are either coming to film later and being interested. But I thought the revenue stream thing was kind of an interesting twist I didn't expect.
Can you go into that a little bit more?
Yeah, lucky.
Yeah. Tell us what happened.
Sure. A couple different things. There are some sponsors for what I do that sponsor the project. It's resulted in a lot of kind of consulting on all different levels. I actually don't consult filmmakers, because I have nothing against anybody that does consult filmmakers, but I wanted to be something that was different. I didn't want to be somebody that was in line taking money from the people I felt that had the least. So that was just my own personal philosophy on it. But so it comes from sponsorship money primarily, and it comes from consulting. So, and the consulting ranges from, you know, ad related to gaming industry to entertainment industry, because I've identified a gap that's there for, you know, filmmakers, but it's also there for other industries. You know, how do you build audience? How do you get people to come to it? How do you create engaging things that keeps them coming back? And there's this real disconnect. So I just was kind of taking some stuff, you know, I guess I'm taking it from the machine and kind of coming back and giving it to the people. So it's been working out pretty well. If that answers the question.
I don't use the blog as a means of teaching filmmaking, although I am actually a film professor, but I don't use it as a means of teaching filmmaking. But I think people can use it as a means of learning about filmmaking. Mm-hmm. I think that's maybe a difference. That would probably be the easiest way to sum it up.
Like more passive versus active.
Well, yeah, I'm not, lesson one, you know, here's how you use a camera. I mean, I think that's not, I think anyone who's probably reading my website is probably making movies with technology that they already understand or have very, you know, it's not going to take much for them to understand how to use a video camera or whatever. There are certain things I talk about, whether it's that are, I guess, would be educational, but I don't think of it as really the purpose of it.
I like that you post. I think you installed an update to Final Cut Pro, and you immediately posted, you know, there's a problem with this, hold off on doing it. And so that kind of sharing of learning so that people don't make the same mistakes is really useful.
Yeah, I think that's more what I'm doing, which is I'm putting my own learning out there in the process, because I think that as filmmakers, you know, we're always learning, and that's what that community that Joel's talking about is so valuable for. That we're share is that you're able to share that learning with each other, where you are in that process and the different things that you're picking up.
And for me, coming from a fiction, Hollywood movies, and making a decision, I really wanted to hang out more with documentary filmmakers. I realized I had a lot to learn. So not only could I be pursuing the people I wanted to talk to, but I could also be doing a service by sharing what I was learning as I learned it with other documentary filmmakers.
I was just going to say, I went to film school for 8 years, and I learned so much more in the time that I actually was working and being out in the industry, going to film festivals, you know, in a short time. I got way more than I did in a long, long time in school. I always tell filmmakers, you don't need to go to school to be a filmmaker. Make a film.
Touch briefly on maybe on revenue issues. I would like to know, I don't think any of us I'm a full-time employee of IFC. I don't know that any of us have, if it's possible even to make your living as a full-time film blogger. I guess it is. I guess there are one or two people out there who do that. What's your approach towards revenue, ads on your site, sponsorships?
I have another job.
And do we want, like, is that the end goal, to be able to support yourself on blogging?
It's a goal. I mean, it would be nice, you know, everyone, you know, it's nice to be your own boss. It's nice to sort of do things on your own terms. There's Google ads, there's blog ads. I personally use blog ads, theoretically. I get ads, and there's an indie film sort of collection of blogs that blog ads sort of sells group ad rates to. But no, I'm not. Most of that is based on traffic. So you know, if you get your traffic up there, and you have content that isn't going to offend an advertiser, you'll get ads. But are you going to make $100,000 a year selling ads? Probably not. So you do have to. Most bloggers I know, either they do it just for fun and don't care about the ads, or they have other supplemental sources of income.
I don't have any ads on my site, and I've made a conscious decision ultimately not to do that. There was a time where, as my blog started to become more popular, I had one internet ad agency, I guess, contact me about doing it, and they wanted like 50,000 unique hits a month. I don't have that, or I didn't have it then, at least. I don't have it now, but didn't even have near that. And I realized that whatever time I would put into trying to get Google ads and all these different things, then I'd become very obsessed with, oh, enough people click on, how much money am I making? Did I make 50 cents today? You know, whatever. And like, how much is my time worth? You know, it's worth a lot more. So I just decided, you know, I'm going to keep it clean. I'm not going to have any ads. I do I'm an Amazon.com Associates program thing where, like, if I'm writing about David Lynch and Inland Empire, and I link to, or actually I remember this, I was writing about Sundance and how Eraserhead was rejected from Sundance during the first Sundance Film Festival. And so I linked to Eraserhead on Amazon.com. And so if someone clicks on that link, then whether they buy Eraserhead or whether they buy, you know, the latest cookbook from, you know, whoever, within the next 24 hours, I get a couple of bucks from that or something. And it's nothing big unless someone buys like an enormous, let's say, GPS system or digital camcorder, which has happened before. You know, I'll check my links and I'm like, oh, I hit the jackpot today. I got like $150. This is fantastic. I get that digital camera I wanted. You know? But it's all a gift as far as I'm concerned. It's not revenue. And you know, I even set this little Amazon storefront thing that you can click through on my website, but before you get there, it says you should borrow these things first if you can get them from a library. I'm not in this to make money. It goes against that notion of self-reliance. Like, go buy more stuff. That is not what this is about. You know, so for me.
Well, I want to differentiate between Google Ads and then blog ads. Blog ads is not something you can just go sign up for. You have to be invited to.
Yeah.
And most of the blogs that they do are lot of the ads, like any of the ads I've ever gotten from blog ads, were all either film ads. Some of them were a filmmaker who had a film at the Pioneer Theater in New York for a week, and they gave me $20 to advertise their film for a week, you know, on a little, it's a picture ad. So it does, it allows people who wouldn't necessarily, because you set your own ad rates. So I have some of my, you know, smaller ad rates that really, really low. So, you know, filmmakers come in there, oh, cool, I can advertise on, you know, this blog for $20. So they go ahead and they do that, and I get, you know, $18, $16 by the way, whatever. That's, you know, it's win-win, you know.
I'm more like Lance. I get, have gotten some other work from what I've been doing. People saw what I was doing, but Renew Media really liked what I was doing and thought that I could help them get their blog off the ground. So they hired me to do that. So that work is paid work. And you know, to me, it definitely would not have happened if it wasn't because I was out there doing this other thing. So. And I experiment with other ads as well. Like I'll try things. I've tried Google Ads. I've tried Amazon. And it's the same thing that Paul was saying. It's very irregular. Unless you're like, if you go to johntp.com that I mentioned before, he writes about WordPress and all of the. He talks a lot about how he uses the tools to generate revenue. So like at one point he said, I want to get into Technorati's top 100 bloggers. Okay, everybody linked me. And so he did this little like round robin to try to push himself into the Technorati top 100, and he did it. And you know,
just for shifts and gigs.
Yeah, I mean, like he wanted to, you know, see if he could do it, and you know, in the process, he gets more money, and more people are on his site and clicking through his ads, and you know, so I think he actually does make quite a bit of money each month just on like Google Ads and the other little monetary generating things that he uses on the site.
I'd say 90% of the money I get from my Barnes & Noble affiliate is me buying things.
So I'm gonna, one more question, and I'm gonna open the floor to questions from the audience. But Joel, you asked, we wanted us to talk about the mistakes we've made, and I think that's a really interesting topic. So if any of you have thoughts on that, mistakes you've made while blogging, things you would take back? No one?
Joel, why don't you start? Because
yeah.
Clearly
yeah,
you've got to start.
Give me a moment to think about it. I know I've made a lot.
I know I personally, I think the one thing I've learned is that people always, if you write about someone, they almost always find out, or you know, they will find it. Like no matter, people you think have much, like directors who I thought were very busy and had other things to do would find out, talk, you know, email me about a review.
That's not necessarily a mistake, though.
Mm-hmm. Right, but I mean, like, I think there's, it's easy to sometimes feel like you're writing out into, you're writing for your friends, or you're writing out into the void, and you know, it's not a void.
I was actually disappointed I didn't get a letter from, apparently Francis Ford Coppola was sending emails and writing letters to people that wrote nasty things about Marie Antoinette.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote a lot of nasty things about that movie, and I didn't get anything from Francis.
He's
like,
a little old school,
really
though.
I'm really not happy.
He's not
about
a blogger.
That.
Well, one of the surprises for me was, this is not a mistake, but a surprise was, I'll go to film festivals and I'll go up and I'll be introduced to people, and just about everyone I meet knows about my blog, and I was surprised at first, but then I realized that most people have a Google blog search with their name on it, and they're, you know, they're either Googling themselves daily or they check their blog search, and if you mention their name, they're going to go to your website. So it's a very effective way to pre-announce yourself to the people you want to be connecting with.
Anyone? Do we have questions? Sir.
So I'm an independent filmmaker, and I'm kind of coming at this another way, and worried that publicist didn't seem to be able to insult you guys. What I'm wondering is, like, when I go back to New York City, I've taught myself Final Cut Pro, because sometimes the producer needs to edit until 2 in the morning, and Pro Tools, and then I'm always putting deals together, and my time is hopefully maximized making movies. That's what I'd love to do, and I have a lot of respect for, like, Lance, who seems to be doing both. But what I'm constantly juggling is now I'm like, do I need to learn about blogging? Like, the trouble for me is that I want to make films and tell stories, and even the littlest bit of marketing is absolutely necessary, but almost a distraction from, you know, going on set or from talking with the writer or talking with the director. And so I guess what I'm really curious about is how do we as filmmakers maximize the efficiency of our time? Because I want to talk to you guys, I want to show you my stuff, but if I can make it 3 minutes, you know, it'd be awesome.
talk to him, he does it really, really well. Mike Tully. He's a good filmmaker, an active filmmaker, and he manages to, every once in a while, post an interesting, fun thing about his blog, and he gets his name out there.
Is your worry about what you need to write as a filmmaker to get people aware of your film, or is your worry about someone like spreading word to other bloggers?
Well, one of the things is that, you know, I don't even have a blog yet.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a blogger, and I'm concerned about, like, I want people to watch my content, and I want to do the marketing behind that. But me as a person, like, whatever. I think hopefully the films I make are much more interesting than me or my opinion. So, you know, I don't even know exactly what it is, except for to say, like, how do I help you guys write neat stuff about me? I think you're probably a lot better at blogging than me. You've been doing it a lot more.
It's really simple. You make a good film.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not mandatory to have your own
because
blog.
There aren't enough of them. And if you make a good film, probably one person on this panel is going to write about it. You know, if it's a good documentary, or if it's a really good micro-budget film, or if it's a really good feature that is made by a production company. I mean, there's a good shot that of those three categories I've just described, one of us is going to write about it. And personally, I'm not interested in reading like filmmakers' blogs about the making of their movie as this sort of promotional tool. I make movies. I know what it's like, and it's not especially interesting, you know. What's interesting is the film. So I would just focus on that. I can actually tie this into the question that Allison asked about what mistakes we've made. Because as a filmmaker, I made a mistake. Early on, I found that, I got bitten by this bug to start this blog, and I started writing a lot of posts. And I wasn't making my films. And, you know, what's serving what here? You know, so I had to scale back on that work and realize that I just wanted to write about things that were really important to me. At South by Southwest, I've been posting a lot more simply because I'm not making movies right now. I'm here watching. But when I go back home, I'm going to be busy with production. So don't spend too much time.
In relation to that point, I was going to say something some sites have done, for example, IndieWire during Sundance will let Sundance and Slamdance and Park City filmmakers post about their experience at the festival, which is a lot more interesting, as you said, than reading about people writing about making movies.
But the one thing I was going to say is, do you have a site for the work that you're doing, just a regular site?
Well, we have, right now we have different sites for our different projects,
okay.
And not personal sites, although we have a site for our company. But I'm still figuring it out. I know a lot more about filmmaking than I do about marketing, and certainly about on the internet. And I think, I guess, you know, people say, of course, make a good film. And, like, I hope the films that I have now are good, and if they're not, they're going to get better, and I'm going to be doing this for years and years and years. But it's worth some of my time to do what I can to give you guys information and to spread word about it. And it's like, what is that next step? So if I made a good film, or if I will make a good film later on, like, what are the, if I could give you 5 minutes of my time, like, what do you want? You want a clip? You want, like, a press release? You want to say hi? You want me to say that I read your blog? Or, like, what's helpful to you, and what makes you excited about the project beyond it being good?
Well, I think that probably fundamentally, I mean, I agree that it starts with a really good film, but I think that there are so many movies being made that it really it comes down to how you're going to reach your audience. And, you know, and a lot of times things will be covered in the press. Like, I've done all my own press for my films, and you identify what the hooks are. You know, what are the hooks that somebody's interested in? What is it about the story? What is it about, you know, you don't add necessarily, I think a lot of filmmakers always fall back on the making of the film, but if you look at what drove you to the film in the first place, you might find some of the answers there. It could be characters within it, it could be the story itself, and then that stuff starts to bubble out. You know, what other groups are interested in it? You know, how can you start to cross-pollinate those audiences? And then that stuff starts to get to the point where there's mass penetration, and then people will start to comment on it or write about it. Because there is an element to where a lot of people talk about things bubbling to the surface. I honestly believe that that's next to impossible. You know, the amount of work that's being made, trying to get through to some of the larger outlets to get coverage, you're just not going to get coverage. So the blogosphere is an excellent place to get, you know, people to write about your stuff, because traditional media is next to impossible.
We talked a little bit before the panel about bloggers as filters, and one of the things that, I don't have a huge amount of traffic, but almost I think everybody who reads my blog is actually industry. So if I am writing about it, something that they haven't seen yet, then they're like, oh, you know, knowing me, maybe, you know, I have to see that, or maybe, oh, she likes it, so I'm not going to see it. I mean, you know, whatever they think about what I write about it. So, you know, there's levels, you know, you might not get to IFC the first shot, so, you know, maybe it's a few of the, like, you know, second tier or whatever, and diminish the importance of it, because I think it is important that the information flows. So we can talk about films that are, maybe wouldn't get the coverage right away, but eventually they'll move on in popularity. But also we do documentaries, and you know, it depends on the film you're making, because like a friend of mine has a film here called Maybe Baby, and it's about women who have fertility problems and going through in IVF and that kind of thing to have children. And she has the women who are in her film posting on her website. So, you know, when she shows the film and people in the audience are really like, you know, it's a really sensitive topic for people, and they want to kind of continue the discussion beyond the film, so they can go to her site and you know, read more, you know, from the women. So, you know, if it's just a feature film and you want to be in theaters and you're hoping to like make big bucks, then that's one thing. But if you're trying to reach an audience, make social change, you know, with your documentary, maybe posting some more, or figuring out ways, maybe there's other people who can do some posting for you. I mean, it's a strategy, like Lance is saying. You have to think about what is right for the project that you're working on.
And speaking to the elements that you should have ready, for me, it's often helpful if I'm doing a podcast interview, if you have an MP3 that's 30 to 60 seconds ready that you can email me so I can incorporate some audio of the film into the podcast. It's helpful if you have high quality photographs of yourself. It's on my site, it's really important to me to have non-publicity shots of directors just being real people. And it sometimes takes, you know, a week or two for the filmmakers actually to go out and shoot the photos that I need for my site. So looking at the kind of coverage on the site and having those elements ready before you approach. And also really making the most of the exposure you're gonna get. So, you know, having a trailer, having a website, even if it's you know, a basic one, so that when people find out about your film and are hungry for it, I mean, a lot of people have written me and they said, you know, I'm really interested in the film after listening to the podcast. You know, is there a website? How can I see a clip? And some filmmakers, you know, they just got finished with their online and they don't have anything online, and it's a wasted opportunity to, you know, start to connect. So. Even if you're not technically savvy, find someone on your team who is, who can work on those elements while you're finishing the cut.
Other questions?
Right, the microphone.
Microphone.
Hi. I find that watching a film and writing about it is actually the least time-intensive thing I do. It's actually getting it posted, formatted, linked, RSS. If I'm doing a podcast, creating that content, and it becomes overwhelming. Especially if you're trying to do multiple say, features or questions or reviews a week. I was wondering how you balanced the technical side, if you're doing it on your own, or if you have a staff, if you're outsourcing, are you just recruiting friends? How do you deal with that?
I hate it. I deal with it, but it takes time, especially if I'm in a hurry, you know, editing. Oh God, I forgot, I have to go back and change that one. But it just, it's, I don't have a staff, I don't have the ability to get, you know, interns or that kind of stuff, so it's just part of, you know, what I do is, when I first started, I actually used to keep the same format that we used when I worked in IndieWire, and I was, like, bolding every name and start putting links up to like everybody that had a website and all their IMD pages, and I just don't do that now. I'll put links up to other blogs. I'll put links up to, you know, if it's an article about someone really and it's all about them, I'll link to their IMDb page. But I'm using less and less, you know, formatting and things that really, really are time intensive and keep my pages relatively simple. I do like to use photographs, so resizing and things takes a little time. But other than that, I mean, it's just keep, you know, it's like, what's the keep it simple, you know, is really the way I save time.
It's a real grind to try and do live coverage from a film festival because, you know, every minute that I'm in my hotel room, you know, proofreading, editing a podcast, you know, spell check. I mean, that's time that I'm not enjoying the festival, not connecting with community. And I'm really leaning toward doing the bulk of my blogging and podcasting before the festival and after, and trying to really preserve the time at the festival to connect in real time. And with podcasts, for an 8 to 10 minute podcast, if I take the time to edit it so it's really information packed and not just a meandering conversation, it might take, you know, 3 to 6 hours to take a 60 minute interview and bring it down to a coherent 8 to 10 minutes, and it is overwhelming.
See, I don't know how to edit, so I'm just going to throw it all up there.
I can address that comment too. I find that if you use blogging software that allows you to save drafts, you can actually prepare a lot of stuff ahead of time. In fact, that's the way that makes me write reviews, is that I have something, you know, for every film first, and then when I see the film, I have a little container to go home and write it into. But I also have a question for you. I'm an old school blogger. I've been blogging since 2000, and my blog is a very general blog about myself, and I've resisted blogging about one thing only. And do you think that I need to create a blog that's just about film to get get the sort of exposure for my reviews?
What's your blog?
ConsolationChamps.com. My other approach would be like, do I do that, or do I try to get my reviews on somewhere like Cinematical or one of those sites that you know, that would take freelance work?
What's your goal?
Just to do more writing about film, but not to have it take over my personal blog.
If you want to be a stop for people to go and find out your opinion about film, I think, yeah, maybe that's valuable. I mean,
if you have the time, I mean, it's, if you have the time, and if neither of them are going to become an orphan, you know, if you want to keep up both blogs, it's, you're basically going to, you know, you're increasing your time that you're going to spend on this, but. Yeah, I agree completely. If you want to be a film destination, you have to have a film blog.
And from the from the perspective of access, do you think it makes a big difference if your blog is called like Film Blog as opposed to?
I think if you're approaching a publicist, then, you know, they're looking at your blog, and the first thing is something about, you know, your relationship, and they might be like, okay, you know,
right.
Is this a serious like blog? Is this something that we want to allow access?
I think the reason I was able to get access to Sundance when my blog was really 4 weeks old was that I had a very focused niche, just covering documentaries that inspire, and having a blog that was named Docs That Inspire. It was self-explanatory, it was highly focused, and my strategy was to start interviewing as many filmmakers who had films at Sundance before I approached Sundance to ask for further access. So I think having a clear focus and a name that allows people to get what you're doing really does help.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason that I get, I think the access that I get is because of the work that I'd done before I started my blog, and I had a name for myself in the community already. Otherwise, they'd go to my blog and see a YouTube video of a swearing foul-mouthed hamster and be a little bit confused.
To go back to something you touched on in the very beginning, Allison, because I think that it was that Frontline documentary last week that talked about kind of in terms of mainstream news, the drop in original reporting and the rise in commentary
uh-huh.
and blogs. So you have traditional journalism kind of waning, at least newspapers, you have blogs and commentary and opinion going up. And I think you can definitely look at that in the film space. You know, the traditional journalists here and a lot of bloggers
hear what you, I'm still trying to think through a lot of this stuff. What do you guys think that says about, or where do you think this is going now, as there are fewer and fewer places that are putting money into original content about film? The people up on the panel saying, we're not journalists, we're just, you know, sharing opinions, we're great community, we're advocates. What does that mean for traditional, original journalism that isn't based on the Hollywood trade? It's sort of, you know, that's something I've been thinking about a lot. I've been listening to you guys talk.
Uh-huh.
As someone who does some what I consider the commentary side of things, I feel like it's a sort of best of times, worst of times situation. Because on the one hand, yes, it's great that there is, you know, in the last 5 years, we've seen this incredible community spring up online that's sort of jump-started film culture. The sorts of discussions that are happening now about films and all sorts of types of films is really unusual, and I wasn't around in the 60s to experience that, those wonderful days of the art, you know, the birth of the art house, right? But that's what everyone tells me it's like, right? But at the same time, you know, things that are happening, like what happened in the Village Voice and all these different places, and the sort of traditional means of reporting, what are all of us who are doing this commentary, what are we going to comment on if we don't have, to me, I feel like I'm commenting on things that are being reported. And without that reporting, it's going to be really tough to do the things that I do. And I mean, to me, it's interesting, like, you know, what you were writing today, Anthony, about the but there's so many people in this audience that, like, I feel like, well, why are we up on the panel?
Yeah, seriously.
You know, you're reporting / commentary about what is happening at South by Southwest this year with the ultra indie films. On the one hand, I felt like that was reporting, and then I don't know, but, you know, I want to see that article in print too, because I still have this bias where I feel like, yeah, it's just on the internet.
It's not real.
I want it to be in print so I can say, yes, it happened, and it's validated in some way.
And so the people that are not part of, you know, sort of our little niche, you know, compared to the rest of the world group, you know, so that the New York Times will write that, and I mean, not just so that people know it's happening, but so that the people that are doing it will get there, get, you know, will people say, hey, there are other types of films to be seen, and, well, this is, you know, okay, I can get past, it's not a widescreen epic, you know, it's an interesting story, and then look at what these, you know, these kids, oh, look, I've got a barn, I've got a camera, let's put on a show, you know, it's like an Andy Hart, I mean, it really was like an Andy Hart movie, you know, and they went and they made a really good film, and there are other people doing that, and there's a whole bunch of them at this festival, and no, I agree completely that, well, maybe it's just a start, maybe, you know, there are traditional media that do pick up from blogs now. I mean, especially in politics, but I mean, they're starting to do it in arts as well. But the, you know, because the blog is such a quick turnaround, traditional media still has to wait a day, so that they will eventually pick it up.
One more question. Oh, I'm sorry.
You know what?
We're done. All right. Well.
come talk to us if you have more questions.
Yeah, please.
They have to set up for another.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, everyone. Thank you.